You're listening to the PR Wind Down Podcast.
Very good.
All right.
Hey, everybody.
Welcome to Trust Relations, the podcast.
Welcome back to the PR Wind Down.
And Trust Relations, the podcast.
Today we're doing both. So we're kicking off the new year with a little experiment. Welcome to our first official crossover episode.
I'm Laura Schooler. And for those of you who have not listened to the PR Wind Down, I am April's co-host on that podcast.
And for those of you who don't know me, I'm Hamish Anderson. I am part of the Trust Relations podcast, and I am the lead of marketing over at Trust Relations.
And I'm April White, and I'm on both podcasts. So if you don't know me, then you haven't been listening to anything. I won't shame you.
But welcome.
But welcome anyway. So we are putting our heads together today to give you the PR and marketing insights that you need to kick off this new year with the bang for your brand and also for clients. It's like a DJ mashup. We even have one super special detail, which is that we have a celebrity guest who is coming on the podcast today. And he is one of my personal favorite people of all time, plus just the most inspiring person in PR one of the most inspiring. I don't want to downplay anybody else that's had a key role in my career, but definitely one of my personal heroes.
I'm excited to meet him.
He's amazing. You're going to love him. All right. So our celebrity guest today is the one and only Doug Spong, whose reputation precedes him. But here's a little bit about Doug. So he's an accreditation in public relations and also PRSA fellow. He's also the founder and CEO of the Doug Spong Company. Prior to that, he was the founder and president and managing partner of the Minneapolis-based Carmichael Lynch Spong, which I worked for, and which is also owned by IPG, Interpublic Group, for those of you not familiar with the acronym. And Doug and I go way, way back, and he is one of the inspirations behind my passion for the industry and the creativity that his agency had as a result of him at the helm. Oh, I know, I feel the same. So Doug is definitely one of those longtime mentors who really I owe a lot to for having set me on the trajectory that I'm on today.
Thank you, April. Very sweet of you.
It's all true. And I know that we did some really fun campaigns back in the day at Carmichael and Spong. I remember Petco's search for America's fastest chihuahua, which was extremely successful, got on GMA. We also did American Standard Singing in the Shower competition, which is another one that Fox and Friends in the Morning. The other one that was super fun that we did was the American Standard Search for America's Sexiest Plumber. And then it was that buxom blonde chick who was like so hot, and it got all that press because she was the only female finalist. And
that's right.
Of course she had to win.
Wow.
Yeah.
And she never talked about that.
She's like a fifth generation plumber too. Do you remember that?
I forgot that detail.
Yeah. She came from a long line of plumbing families. So
I love it.
She was good.
You never mentioned that before, April. That's really interesting.
I guess I haven't. We did a whole media event with a runway component. Oh, so they all walked the runway, and then there was like a calendar, like a pinup calendar.
Yeah,
it's so
and
funny.
So the 12 finalists all had their own month, right? Like Ms. January, Mr. February. Like they were all smoking.
Wait, so the reason why it's so funny, not because it's a great campaign to begin with, is I don't know if I ever told you or if you ever watched my one big stand-up comedy thing. I think I told you I did a number of years ago.
You never sent it to me, and I haven't stalked you enough to find it. Now I'm going to.
So part of my spiel was that my doorman was really hot, and I was planning on doing a hot doorman of New York City calendar. And it just reminded me of that.
I like that. And I remember the plumbers, they lined up to enter that competition too.
There were a lot of plumbers in that competition.
We had thousands of entries.
Wow.
Yeah.
That was amazing. Yeah. So Doug, how did you
wait, get one more thing.
Oh, okay.
My friend rebranded American Standard also.
Really?
Yes, totally. I wonder if it was around the same time. Anyway.
Such a small world.
So many small world events. Yeah. Okay, go on, April.
No, I'm just going to say, I was curious, Doug, if you could share a little bit about your journey into public relations and how you've seen the industry change over the years. I'm super curious. I mean, I know it's changing every 6 months. Yeah. And with you having been in the industry for such a substantial amount of time, I'm curious, that 10,000 foot view, what does it look like?
Oh, yeah. Well, my journey into the public relations profession really started in summer of 1972. There was this little thing called Watergate that happened that summer. I just finished seventh grade that year. And how many seventh graders become fascinated with kind of politics and something that big? Well, I got it. Okay.
We'll talk about that. Laura,
only you.
Laura does. We were nerds together in 19, in our young year.
I was a little later, but.
Okay. Yeah. You're not that old. But then you got this 36-year-old attorney, John Dean. If everybody recalls, he was the first one to kind of coin the phrase, there's a cancer on the presidency. And I became fascinated with it. I read his book called Blind Ambition. And then, of course, the movie came out. All the President's Men with Robert Redford and Dustin Hoffman, who played Carl Bernstein and Bob Woodward, of course. And I became fascinated with it. It led me to journalism school. And then kind of about halfway through journalism school, I decided I didn't want to be just the guy reporting the news that other people make. I wanted to be the guy who helps make the news that other people report. And so, of course, that's public relations. And my first job was I've only worked for two agencies my entire career. Wow. So I started at a shop called Cullen McVoy in Minneapolis, and I spent 9 years there. And then from there, I went over as a managing partner, president, co-founder of Carmichael Lynch Spong, where I was for 25 years. And then about 7 years ago, I retired from that. My business now is actually helping agencies kind of find their position and grow their business and be as successful as they can be. And so I've done that now for 7 years.
Wow. I love it. I love
it. That's great.
And where do you see PR going in this sort of strange economy, in this, cancel culture landscape? I mean, it's an interesting time, right?
It is a crazy time. We've come out of COVID, I think, pretty well, thanks to science and vaccines, that have kind of helped bring that under control. As business really picked up, kind of employee attitudes changed. And it's a great resignation, I should say, people just deciding, okay, I want to do something more purposeful in my life, and I want to make a fair wage for doing that. And, and then you throw in kind of this mix of the last, 15, 20 years of social media and what that has meant for, the business, both from an employer's perspective, how social media influences how people look at their careers, but also how we as practitioners use social media in our day-to-day work. And there's a good and there's a corrosiveness to social media and what it's done to us, particularly as you consider politically and how it's helped kind of corrode, that trust among the employee-employer relationship, that trust between kind of consumers and brands, trust in institutions, and even trust kind of just broadly in our social circles. I'm not talking about just social media, but, the friendships and relationships that we have and how we view information and how we view institutions, whether it's our government or business or, any of that, even nonprofits.
The media.
And of course, media has gotten caught up in that. So, it's interesting. I think of it as kind of fracturization that's been going on. It isn't just breaking out into, we've heard about tribalism in the past. And I think it's more than that, because even within I always think of tribalism as kind of frames within a window. You might have several frames within a window. I think it's become more fractured today. Even those individual frames have kind of, crack and split. It's a real challenge right now, I think, as practitioners, of what is it we do and what value do we add? And I think, April, I think it goes down to really the heart of your business, the brand name that you've got, Trust Relations. At the heart of what we do, it's about forging trust,
yeah.
right? I mean, you know, you can say, well, we're in the communications business. And if you say, well, why? Why are we in the community? Okay, well, we're there to help manage reputations. Well, why does reputation management matter? I mean, when you kind of keep peeling those layers of the onion back and asking why, you finally get to that hardcore, which is, you know, it's about trust. That is what we do. We build trust because trust is, it's like air, you know, and water. It's kind of that basic ingredient in any kind of functioning society and functioning relationship. And so I think right now, you know, the best firms coming into 2023, I think have certain commonalities about them that are all centered around building trust. Think of it this way, they're firms of endearment. You know, number one is they always start with purpose. You know, they have a very well-defined purpose in the world. What is it they bring to the world around us that makes us all a little bit better? Mm-hmm. And the second thing is, I think from a culture standpoint, you know, these firms of endearment, the best firms that are out there, they're all about kind of humility, humanity. And I would also throw in there a little bit of hilarity.
You know? we have no sense of humor, as you can tell.
Yeah, I've always believed a sense of humor is a sign of intelligence. So hilarity is part of that. Humility in the standpoint of, you know, these are firms that they don't take themselves so seriously, that they understand they're all about the humanity side of the business, that it is about their employees and what's that covenant that they have with their employees, whether it's, you know, somebody's first stop in their career right out of school, it's the last stop in their career at the end of their, you know, 35, 40 years in the business, or something in between. You know, the best firms make it their best stop. You know, people move around. They even not just change employers, they change careers. But I think the best firms have a way of making sure that at that moment in time, that's your best stop with them. And, you know, part of that is that, you know, they're picky about the clients that they represent, and they look for clients that are deserving of our best efforts. You know, nobody wants to work for clients that are or that are really, you know, are corrosive on the culture and esprit de corps that a firm has. And so good firms, you know, when they find a client that doesn't fit that, you know, they find a way to say goodbye. And, you know, that goes a long way with your staff, you know, in this business, being able to do that. The other thing is, I think it's important to share the wealth with people. And I mean that by, you know, both the benefits that you offer and, you know, in just about every HR survey I've ever seen, time off consistently ranks as the number one benefit. Yeah, you've got healthcare and you've got dental and you've got disability and all of that, but time off and quality time off, whether it's, you know, it's an expectant mother and you look at maternity, you look at a couple that's adopting, caring for an elderly parent or a sick child, things like that. It's also important to have that kind of quality time off. And so that's part of the sharing the wealth. The other part of it is we all go to work to earn money to afford the lifestyle that we want to live. And so it's being sure that these, you know, these firms also share in not just the base wage, but the incentives and the other things that can kind of go along with that to create a great lifestyle for people.
So yeah, it's about treating people like humans, isn't it? It's saying to them, we respect who you are and what you're wanting and giving you value for it, whether they're your employees, whether they're your customers or prospective clients. It's the relationships. It's really moving back that way, isn't it?
That's right. Absolutely. There's an interesting, you know, the social media piece of it too. I think there's no simple solution right now to, you know, the corrosiveness that social media has kind of cast on a lot of our institutions and has made it challenging for us as practitioners. But, you know, even just if you look at, you know, like politics, there's an organization, what's it called? Oh, it's called More in Common. And they do a survey every now and then. It's called Hidden Tribes. And what they've kind of identified is that politics kind of is a broader symptom of what's going on, particularly with social. And, you know, they basically identified kind of seven different groups. Obviously, two ends of the spectrum. On the far right, you know, you've got these kind of what they call devoted conservatives who represent about 6% of the U.S. population. Yeah, it's a small, it is, but it's a very vocal group. And on the other end of the spectrum, you've got these progressive activists that represent 8% of the U.S. population. And so the challenge is, you know, how do we kind of as America, here you got 8% and 6%, how do we as practitioners stay away from the fringe and really focus on the, you know, the groups in the middle that are more apt to listening, you know, they're open to new ideas, and they can help influence really a broader majority. How do we kind of focus on those that we can have an impact on?
That makes a lot of sense.
But do you think that it's so much different than other generations? I mean, imagine the generation that shifted from no rock and roll to rock and roll, right? Then you had the 60s, and that was just tremendous. So it's not, I feel like too many of the generations now are like acting as though this is the first time this has ever happened. It's the first time it's ever happened like this.
Yes.
But I don't think it's the first time it's ever happened.
I remember one of my favorite quotes says, "The children now love luxury. They have bad manners, contempt for authority. They show disrespect for elders, and they love chatter in place of exercise." And that was from Socrates.
Yes.
And so you look at how long ago that was. It's been forever. And we think that we're unique now. I think the biggest problem is, as you've touched on, is that we have greater amplification of it now through social media, through more channels than we've ever had before. And it's not all at the feet of social media, but I wanted to ask you, actually, my run at, you know, marketing is more of the traditional marketing and the strategy that underpins it. I'm curious, how do you see the interplay between PR and the more, air quotes, traditional marketing? And what do you think the future for those two needs to or should look like?
I've been in the business 42 years, and I've been fortunate in that time to see the collaboration between public relations and other marketing disciplines, whether it's advertising, it's direct marketing, you know, of course, in the last 30 years, digital has really supplanted a lot of traditional advertising. And what I've seen is much more collaboration between marketing resources and public relations to the point where, you know, they're now kind of one and the same. It's just they happen to employ people with specializations in, you know, certain areas, whether it's PR or it's digital insights and it's digital creative, and, you know, they're working a lot better together. And I think that has created a much more interesting profession for all of us. Mm-hmm. But I also think it's complicated the, you know, how we work together, because as you know, I mean, anytime you get two or more people, you know, in a room to work, it takes a lot of effort, it takes a lot of cooperation, it takes a lot of planning. It takes some strong leadership and strong voices in the room to kind of keep things moving forward. But I think for clients, at the end of the day, they get a better product as a result of that.
Do you have any examples of where something like that has really happened and been magic?
Yeah. And in fact, you know, April, you mentioned American Standard, always one of my favorite clients for all of those years. We had a great client, a very, what I always call a deserving client, you know, a client that inspired us as a firm to do our best. This was a client that had a big appetite. They had big expectations. And so when we launched a product called the Champion Toilet for American Standard, it was basically they had reinvented what was invented by Thomas Crapper. So if you wonder where that name comes from, that's it. Invented the toilet. And you know, basically toilet design hadn't changed in like 120 years. And American Standard said, what if we took some of the twists and turns out of the bowl? And in the tank, we invent this, what they called the flush tower. And it actually provides this power to flush things down, because that was consumers' worst complaint is, I have to flush once, I have to flush twice or whatever to get whatever done. And so in that, PR kind of took the lead in that we launched Champion Toilet with Ty Pennington. Remember Ty from America's
I do.
Home Makeover? And so Ty was kind of our spokesperson for that. And, you know, we had placed Ty like on The Tonight Show. At that time, it was Jay Leno was kind of at the end of his career on The Tonight Show. But we flushed 29 golf balls, because that's what the champion could do. It could flush 29 golf balls in this toilet. So we filled the bowl. We did some fun things. But PR really strategically kind of led before any paid advertising, and we had television, we had print, there were trade in, you know, home magazines. It led. And by the time the first ad broke after PR led, they had actually sold through the entire Target allotment of American Standard Champion Toilets, because there was such kind of consumer interest in the story and Ty Pennington as a spokesperson. And so it was a very collaborative approach, but there was very much kind of a timed you know, cadence to how things were going to roll out.
Right. And that's not a $8,000 a month budget or anything like that either, obviously. I mean,
No, that was a big budget. You know, not everything has to be a huge budget. I mean, I've seen mm-hmm. some things that are, you know, relatively modest, you know, annual budgets in the, you know, $50,000 to $75,000 range or even smaller. That's the beauty of our business. It's creativity. You know, it's kind of the mm-hmm. originality of what is the idea, and not the idea in terms of just the execution creatively, but kind of the broad idea of, you know, the central spine of an idea that supports everything we're going to do to kind of launch this. But, you know, there are low budget things. When we launched, I think it was the 25th anniversary for Hasbro's Rubik's Cube. Mm-hmm. And we partnered with the movie with Will Smith about happiness. What was
the Pursuit of Happiness?
Pursuit of Happiness, thank mm-hmm. you. So Will was just launching that movie. And if you've seen that movie, you know that the Rubik's Cube is kind of a central figure in that. And that, you know, he was solving that Rubik's Cube in the back of a cab. And that's how he got invited to come be an intern at the brokerage house. Mm-hmm. Well, we had the world champion cuber, 22-year-old kid, actually teach Will Smith how to cube and how to solve it in a short amount of time. Well, we put Will Smith on the road. This was a budget at the time of,
$30,000. It's good that this happened in the past, because right now you're not using Will Smith from...
No, we would not be using Will Smith right now. But he was hot. So he was on Martha Stewart. I mean, he was on Ellen at the time.
Was he doing like the Rubik's Cube?
And they actually would hand him a cube and say, I hear you can solve the Rubik's Cube. And within about 12 to 15 seconds, he could get that cube manipulated wow. and solved.
Crazy.
Very quickly. So it was a lot of fun. And, you know, it was a low budget. So it was a central idea. We piggybacked on the movie and the fact that the studio was promoting the movie and sending Will Smith all over God's creation.
Yep.
You know, so we just said, hey, we're going to hand him a cube. We'll talk to the producers. Will Smith can really cube. Make it something fun and interesting. And everywhere he went, he just promoted that cube. And the nice thing of that was a PR only, because the client Hasbro at the time didn't have the budget for any paid advertising, anything else. So we know it was all PR driven. There was no other support going on. And here he had a product that was stagnant for 7 years in terms of sales. Well, that right. lifted the product by threefold. I mean, they sold three times the number of product as a result of that campaign.
Brilliant.
So impressive.
That's amazing.
Do you have any other favorite campaigns that you want to share with the listeners, and or any other advice that we didn't impart yet to agency owners?
Yeah, you know, I was fortunate. We worked with some of America's favorite brands. And so one of my favorite little pet clients was, we took Silk Soy Milk. If you know White Wave Food.
I remember this. Go yes. ahead, though. Sorry.
And so Silk, at the time, they were, well, the founder used to call them a 10-year startup, because they could never get traction. And at a time when others were marketing soy milk as kind of the medicinal, you know, all they talked about was the health benefits and the nutrition label. And we came in and we said, let's make it cool. And so we got people like Paris Hilton and Nicole Richie, you know, the party queens, everywhere mm-hmm. they went, they had their Silk t-shirts on, and we'd have these Silk lattes. We partnered with Starbucks and made these really cool Silk lattes that were delicious. And it became kind of the cool Hollywood brand everywhere we went. And so it went from kind of selling about $10 million a year in soy milk to about $300 million a year. So much so that the company was actually acquired by Dean Foods. And the founder, an old hippie from Boulder, Colorado, Steve Demos, he actually, you talk about doing good and doing right by your people. The day he sold the company, he gave every employee $10,000 for every year of service that you were there. So you had some,
wow.
There were some people, I remember there was a woman in production or shipping who'd been there, I think, for 17 or 18 years, and she got $180,000.
Oh my God.
And had never been able to afford her own home at that point. And so, you know, she took those funds and put it towards the purchase of a new home. And
I love that.
You know, that's very rewarding.
Did you do PR on that?
I mean, that's purpose, right? That's changing the world yeah. in some way, making things a little bit better.
Right. It's like Ben and Jerry's sounding, you know, that kind of mission. Interesting. Yeah.
You know, we also had some foibles over the years, and that kind of reminds me, we had one campaign that went astray for Light Life Foods. And again, you have to talk about humility and hilarity. So they made soy dogs and soy burgers. We had this idea, as misguided as it was, to go to major ballparks and replace the all beef Franks with soy dogs, Light Life soy dogs. Well, we underestimate when people go to a ballpark, they aren't there to eat healthy, right? They want peanuts, they want popcorn, they want Cracker Jack, and they want their hot dogs. Well, we were giving away Light Life dogs at these major league ballparks, and people did not like the flavor of these, even though they were good for them, yada, yada. And we started the world's largest food fight at about 8 major ballparks across the country. They were throwing them on the field. They were throwing these dogs at each other. And we got a reprimand from Major League Baseball for such a stupid idea.
That is hilarious. I mean, so talk about PR for that. Were they upset in the end? Were they happy because it was such a big kerfuffle?
The client was not happy. No.
Did you not use the no news is bad news?
You learn from your mistakes and you go, well, you know, it might have been a great idea at one point, but I guess we didn't consider the audience all that well.
Oh, but yeah.
That reminds me of that, you know, that WKRP in Cincinnati.
Yes. As and, God was my witness, I thought turkeys could fly.
Right. That's what it reminds me of.
You know, Gordon Jump actually used to be a client of ours because we had Maytag.
The Maytag guy, right.
He was the Maytag old lonely repairman. He was there for 17 years.
Right.
Gordon Jump was the nicest guy you could ever be around because we had a paid staff member who was paid full time just to travel to 240 events with him throughout the year.
Right.
He was a great guy and he always traveled in his blue Maytag repairman uniform.
Right. I remember it.
But no matter where we went, people would always walk up and say, tell me the line with the turkeys. And he would say, as God is my witness, I thought turkeys could fly.
It's so great.
Spokespersons are really interesting. You know, of course, you've got for Progressive, you got Flo, and now they're kind of introducing some of the other characters with
Jamie.
Flo. You know, Geico, you've got the little gecko, and you know, spokes characters and spokespeople are still, I mean, you think of it as old school, you know, it's like 1950s, you know, it's Tony the Tiger, but it is amazingly powerful. And it gives you so many different little kind of avenues that you can go off with and do things that really interact with, you know, with consumers.
And, and you got to hope that your spokesperson doesn't go off and do something crazy though, which is why it's probably controllable to have, you know, a cartoon character who isn't going to go off and do something crazy. Right.
No. Yeah. You have to have good lawyers who put together good, naughty contracts, you know, so.
That's why like having like, you know, big sports heroes, you know, is.
I know.
You never know. It's touchy.
You don't know. No, that's right. You don't know.
But speaking of sports, the guy from the Buffalo Bills.
Yeah. Hamlin.
I mean, talk about a miracle, but also how I can see how he personally is turning this into like this, the whole world came together and prayed him back to health. Basically, it's really, I think it's going to have a long, long tail. And the Bills, I mean, they better milk this one because it's spontaneous, it's authentic, it's needed. It's so many things. What a great story. And the fact that I was sure he wasn't going to make it. And I think a lot of people thought that he wasn't going to either. And
he's
sort of turning lemons into lemonade. I mean, I hope that the Bills are able to.
You know, it speaks to the size of the audience, first of all, that follows the NFL. I mean, if you look at the top 10 shows every week,
it's
in terms of audience,
it's
7 or 8 of the top 10 are all NFL. It's, you know, it's NFL Sunday Night Football. It's the pre-NFL Sunday Night Football. It's Sunday Football. It's Monday Night Football.
Right. I mean, it's not like playoffs. It's just regular games.
So here you've got this huge audience of Americans watching this game, right? And then when Hamlin makes the tackle, stands up, falls over from his heart stopping, if it hadn't been the NFL, if it had just happened at a, you know, a soccer game with 20,000 people or a Major League Baseball game, not on television, you know, it wouldn't have had the same impact because here you are with the largest audience in the country, given any any week.
Yep.
They saw it, and it really struck people. And you know, he was fortunate to be around, you know, 30 of some of the best healthcare professionals. It's science saved his life. You know, the medical community saved his life, because I saw a stat that said, you know, 90% of the people who had what he had pass away from it. They don't survive. Mm-hmm. That.
Wow.
So he was lucky that he was playing for the NFL, and that's, you know, if you are.
Well, right. It wouldn't have happened if he wasn't playing for the NFL, but because he was, he also was alive because it happened. Right. I mean, it's a very interesting.
But I think that, you know, I think the Bills organization, and I think all of the NFL teams, you know, had a very emotional and very genuine reaction to it. I love your cat. And I think, you know, that's what, to me, was it played out. It wasn't anybody's sitting there strategizing at
night.
Well,
exactly.
You know, it was very authentic. You know, I hate the term because it's so overused these days, but
it truly was. It seemed to me that they, without using it, they very much did a good job of sustaining and supporting it in the right way.
Right.
But you're, I mean, the NFL has more money than any, by a long shot, any league, anything. So they have the right people, you know, doing the right things. And it might not have turned out the same way in a different league or a different, you know, industry. Right. Who knows?
That's right.
Yeah.
Well, Doug, I know we've been putting you on the hot seat this whole time. So I have a famous question, which is, do you have any questions for us?
Since I've
been shining the spotlight on you the whole time, which is hard not to, because you're glowing PR sensei.
Yeah. My question for you guys is, you know, where do you see the industry going in 2023? And what do you, from your client perspective, and, you know, what are you hearing that's important to them going forward?
That's an interesting one. I feel like people are kind of battening down the hatches and preparing for the worst economically, but nobody is fully convinced that it's all the way to a recession. And so people are sort of moving ahead, but very cautiously, right? So I'm seeing that people are, in terms of moving forward with a retainer commitment, things like that. And even, as you know, PR tends to be the first thing that gets cut from a marketing budget. So people are definitely sort of thinking about, how do we make a really smart spend? And I think because of that, it will be, and it's already been important, but I think it's going to be more and more important for PR to show how it basically amplifies everything you're doing on the marketing side. And in general, I think it also just underscores the need to show that interplay, which is something that we're really trying hard to do. Trust relations, like, how does PR feed SEO? And then how does that demonstrate the value of PR even further because it's got that piece of it? Or, you know, how does it interplay with content marketing? And you don't want to come up with all these great content marketing ideas and then let them fall flat and not use them for PR. And then your social media falls flat if you don't have anything but self-promotion, right? Because then it's only ad related or look how great we are. But if you don't have the look how great the media says we are component to it, then everything starts to look a little, you know, saccharine. Yeah. It's like a little much. Yeah.
It is. Yeah. And consumers, you know, they have a very short attention span, as you know, and especially when it comes to online content. It's like if the punchline isn't there within about 3 or 4 seconds, you know, they're moving on. They're scrolling away from that feed, or, you know, they're onto a different site, or depending 100%. On what the behavior is. But so they have the attention span and like a puppy in a room of bouncing balls. So you know, you got to provide some great content that's creative, it's unexpected, and it's immediate. It hits them. That punchline is, you know, it's
right. They don't have to go looking for anything or finding something else or trying to put two and two together. It needs to all be right there. Yeah.
Absolutely. And quick. Hey, April, too, the other thing, I'm curious, given your background and you know, print journalism over the years, how have you seen, you know, how has media relations changed for you and for the firm?
That's a great question. One thing that I noticed shifting around the pandemic, but even before that, got accelerated by the pandemic, is just the request for contributed content has gone up quite a bit, especially on the B2B tech side. Mm-hmm. So you pitch something, you say, hey, you know, this is a great story idea. And they say, cool, can you write it for us? And so I think it's become really important that you have a great team of writers that knows the brand voice, that can push those through in a way that's meaningful both to the brand and the publication. And then I would say, because the staff of each publication has gotten smaller and smaller and smaller, then, I mean, it was always important to do custom media outreach. That was, blast pitching is never a great tactic, but it's become even more important to really stay on top of what people are writing. So I know some of our best media relations people actually have, Google Alert set up. So every time the writers that they're interfacing with write something relevant to any of their clients, they get those alerts and they can say, hey, great article today based on our last conversation, et cetera, et cetera. I think that this is our new client's a great fit for you if you're looking for XYZ Roundup. And then on the consumer side, I'm sure you know that all of that affiliate marketing stuff has just become increasingly important. And so that's something that keeps boggling my mind as, somebody who is a journalist. We've even had, success doing, okay, for Mother's Day, your affiliate percentage goes from here to here if you're able to include it in the roundup. So you have to be even more highly strategic to make sure that you're getting through and know exactly what kind of subject lines that particular reporter is looking for. If it's like, hey, affiliate opportunity, colon, right? So for some reporters, it has to be that aggressive. It just,
April,
but
when
you
say,
to know the audience.
When you say from here to here, do you mean dates? Like parameters around dates? I got you.
Yeah. So the team will say, hey, you'll get a 20% kickback.
This time.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's so crazy.
It was just crazy to me. It's like, it's the way things are going, So you've got that. And I just think that it's become even harder. It was already hard, but it's become even harder. You still can't call any favors. You still have to be smart and do good research and know who's covering what. And I know some people even veer too far in the direction of it being too specific. I had somebody who told me that they had mentioned the name of a bunny that they saw the reporter had through Instagram, but we kind of surmised afterwards that maybe the bunny had died. And so they mentioned the but like, hey, this would be a great product, pet product for Fluffy, whatever it was, the bunny name. And then that reporter was so offended that they had been stalked, right? So there's also a fine, because you do have all of this access to all this personal information now, but how much you use also has to be done with a lot of emotional intelligence.
Yeah.
I know we've kept you way over, Doug, but so is there anything else that you wanted to get into that we didn't? Anything I didn't ask you I should have?
I don't think so. We've had fun today. Yeah, thanks.
We've had so much. No, it's so much fun. I was like, I don't want this to ever end, but I also realize we're way over time for you. I don't care. But
fine.
You have Marco Island to explore, so.
That's right. I'm on island time. It doesn't
matter. Okay, good. You and Hamish.
Absolutely.
I'm on an island.
Okay, fair enough. Okay, I'm the only one not on an island then.
Yeah. You're an island in of yourself now.
Yeah, you are
not
an
part
island.
Of us.
Okay, that is true. Yeah, that's a good one. All right. Well, Doug, thank you so, so much. I really appreciate you taking the time to do this. I'm still humbled to have you here and still aspire to someday be able to tell even half the number of stories that you've been telling today.
I'm sure you've got quite a few, April. Thank you, guys. It's been a pleasure.
Thank you so much, Doug. We appreciate it.
All right. Take care.
See you, Doug.
Thanks.
See you guys.
Bye.
Take care.
So that was an amazing interview. It's even hard to leave that in the past, but we have a very exciting next segment, which Hamish, I think you know from listening, we have horror stories as part of the PR wind down. And essentially what happens is somebody writes in every different episode with a horror story from the industry. It could be something that happened to them that was horrible, something big mistake that they made, some way that the client treated them that was unbelievable. So it can be a variety of things. And so today, since you are sort of new to the horror stories, I would love
I've done this once before. It's good fun.
so I would love for you to read today's horror story.
Oh, okay. This will be exciting. I will get into my best voiceover voice. Hi, April and Laura. I'm 23, and I know I'm no supreme overlord of PR, but I am good at my job. I am on 6 client accounts as an AE with managers, ACs, and other team members in the mix. My brother got married last month, and I took a week of PTO to go to his wedding in the mountains in Colorado. I handed off my tasks or finished them early, and I even put in some hours the first couple of days of my vacation to make sure some media ops were handled. Then I officially logged off. I come back on Monday and I check my accounts, and nobody has done any work. Nobody made the call agendas. Nobody sent out pitches. Nobody drafted any new pitches. Nobody sent out the media briefers. Nothing. Some of it was work I had delegated to others for my out-of-office time. Some of it was the stuff I'm normally the one following up with the team about for status updates. You know, their own tasks that they never remember to do. So I emailed my managers, politely, and asked if there were any updates I should be aware of, since it didn't seem like anything changed while I was out. And I get this back from one of my managers. Hi. Ooh, wow. Hi. They didn't call me an but that's how I felt it to be honest. You obviously know we are severely short-staffed. We have Debbie on fully paid maternity leave, and some people keep taking PTO. Do you understand that we have thousands in extra freelance costs every month? Last month, we took a $30,000 loss. That was in caps. Then people return from vacation and are shocked by the workload that has piled up. Where exactly do you think we can send that work? Who should take it? Are we supposed to spend even more money on freelancers? Should we take an even bigger loss to make up for the time people took off? I assume you think people are following my guidance to let us know when you feel overwhelmed, but the rest of the team is not responsible for the accumulated workload that results from your badly timed PTO. You'll have to do your best here. Signed off, manager. I don't even have a question. Maybe I just wanted to know. WTF, is this normal? Signed off again, PTO, whiplash. Well, that's a fun one. April, if people could see your face, you are shocked. Laura, you're equally shocked.
Okay, that horror story is f***ing awful. I hate it. I mean, it's a good story, but I hate what happened.
I'm having a hard time speaking because there's so many things that
so awful
touch like my hot button issues and like PTSD.
I think you mean PRSD.
PRSD.
Ooh, nice. And I am trying to pull together my thoughts on what just seems like horrifically bad people management, low emotional intelligence, and an agency that this lovely person needs to run as far away from as possible.
Right.
If they're short-staffed and they're pushing downhill and not taking on any workload for themselves, they need to get out before they're just made scapegoat after scapegoat, because right, they're not going to be represented well to their clients. No matter how good the job is that they do, when they're not present, their managers are just going to keep bagging on them. That's my thoughts. You didn't ask for them, but I'm giving them to you.
This is horrific, but I think it kind of goes back to the point Doug was making about part of being a good agency and having those differentiators is providing a good culture that gives people time off. And I think that if you don't do that, you don't demonstrate that you care about the people. And if you don't do that, then you can't maintain great staff. So, I mean, this is a great example of what he was talking about in terms of, you know, it's a brother's wedding.
It's badly timed though, April. Are you forgetting it was badly timed, PTA?
It's not. And also it sounds like person it sounds their like brother's the, wedding is.
Right.
Like,
and it also sounds like the person did, you know, everything within their power to make sure that everything was set up so that when they were gone, things would be taken care of. And then nothing happened.
Yeah. They were proactive. They were organized. They were communicative. Everything you want from somebody who is an AM. And yet they're the ones who are being ostracized and cast out for doing the right thing. And they, if they took PTO, I'm sure that someone knew in advance and had approved it. So it's not badly timed. It just was unfortunate timing for the other workload. And it's not
it's
her
also
fault.
Never a good time or in his? PR right. to take time off. Right. There's never like, oh, this week's going to be, with one exception, which is why we close our offices.
Christmas to New Year's.
Yeah. No PR is done because no reporters are there and it wouldn't even make sense to be pitching media. So that's the only time. But otherwise, when can you ever take time off that it's not inconvenient to somebody?
Right. And you never, and in PR, things pop up all the time, right?
All the time.
The other thing.
And it's not like she planned the vacation, like her brother planned the what? You don't get that's. It's not like, oh, I just chose this date to go to Alaska. Like, it's the.
Disneyland was having a 2-for-1. I'm going.
It's not even about that. Like, that's like kind of. if somebody has PTO, they could take it off to sit in a room and look at the wall if they wanted to. Like, that's, I don't even care. I don't even care what the reason was. The thing that other thing that jumps out at me is that this more senior manager, right, was like telling this person like all of like the problems in the agency and like why, like, how dare you? We spend money on this and we don't have enough people for that. Why is that a like manager, like, you know, and I'm assuming when manager, I'm thinking like a, you know, a junior level manager, like your middle level, like, are all of the burdens and finances of this agency, like that person, should they even know about that? And why would that be their burden?
Look at the opposite of that. If you want to make the profit and loss of the agency their burden, well, then you have to give them the authority that comes with it to then choose when they have their own PTO. You can't say, you're responsible for this, but no, you can't be responsible for your own time.
Right, right.
You can't have both.
Wow. Well, this is the sort of, you know, caustic management in, and I don't know, because I've really only been in PR, although I've been in-house at other kinds of companies, but I have just seen this type of management happen a lot. That story has similarly happened to me many, many, many moons ago, where I almost never took time off. And I did, I took, you know, 1 or 2 days off, like around a holiday, and I came back and absolutely nothing that I had asked other people to do was done. And they were just like, and I lost my mind.
Now I can imagine why.
I mean, it's crazy.
It's interesting because this is actually one of the pain points that I saw in the industry when I wanted to start Trust Relations, is this lack of teammanship, because it feels so competitive and like the shit rolls downhill and people are passing off work and clawing each other's backs, you know, to get a promotion ahead of the other one. And, you know, I didn't like it. It wasn't nice. It was like Mean Girls, the PR version, you know, and or like high school PR version. Like, I didn't want that for my life. And so it's become a really important thing to me that the culture at Trust Relations does have that collaborative feel, teammanship. And if anybody sticks out of that, you know, it's usually time to let them go, because it's like, I need this to feel like everyone's got each other's back and like whatever you're dropping, right, I'll pick up. I got it. Like, I'm never too big to, I don't want any senior people to be like too big to write a press release or too big to make edits to a release. You know, I don't want that kind of like, let me give you this feedback and then you can incorporate it because I'm too high and mighty to do that job. Right. Like, that's that kind of stuff.
Or the other thing, like, I'm going to like take on extra work and it's going to be a pain in the neck. But then luckily when I want to leave, other people will pick up the extra work and it'll be a pain 100%. In their neck. Right.
Yeah. And that's like, that's what you do as a team.
What goes around comes around, as they say.
Yeah.
And then the last thing I want, there was one other thing I wanted to say. Oh, I wonder if this senior manager thought this was like, you know, a teaching moment. Like, does this senior manager realize how horrible what they said and did and all is? Or do they, and they don't care because they just want to like drill? Or do they really think this is how it, how it should be, and this is how you teach junior people like the real world?
No,
it might be
questions here. Yeah, might be.
Because they're out of touch.
I will tell you this: it's a teachable moment, whether they meant it to be or not, in a negative sense. Because
but I mean, do they really think that they were like being like? Did they not realize how detrimental what they did could be?
Everything is a teachable moment, Laura, and this is one of those moments where no one communicated with this poor person. They've tried to talk up the chain and down the chain, and they've just been made an island and they're left out to dry. That is, it's entirely teachable. And I think if we look at it from the point of view of what can PTO whiplash do, actually, I'll throw to you guys. What do you think PTO whiplash should do?
Oh, that's the name of our letter writer?
Yeah,
oh, well,
PTO,
you know,
whiplash.
You know what I always say? I'm always like, keep it moving. Like, start looking for another job, because if this person is going to be your senior manager like for the foreseeable future, if this, it's only going to get worse or remain as bad if this is the person's mentality.
Yeah, I agree. Plus, do not do that to other people, because I think that
don't turn around and do it.
Difficult to not learn things from bad examples rather than, okay, I learned that I don't want to do this and I'm not going to do it. But I think a lot of times you learn, oh, that's how you treat somebody when you're managing them. And then you turn around and you do it, even though you hated it when it was done to you. Mm-hmm. So just to add to that, I would say, keep it moving and don't repeat that.
Right. Well, I'm going to add to your add-on.
Okay. Ooh, I'm going to add to your add-on.
What is happening?
I think you have to keep it moving, because if you stay there, it's not only are you then potentially learning how to treat people, but you're wasting time in not learning from someone who can teach you more. And so you need to go somewhere where you're going to be cultivated and learn and be able to grow in your own career.
Like Doug Spong.
That's right.
Like Doug Spong. And thanks, then Doug. Also, don't be afraid to take more PTO. Because if somebody did that to me when I was younger, I'd be like, oh, I'll just never take time off and I'll never get yelled at again.
That's a great tip, because if you're scared of it and you've got emotional scarring on it.
And that might be why the senior manager did it.
Yeah.
I don't want them to ever do this again because it's a pain in my neck. So I'm going to scare the crap out of them. And
they'll never take time off again.
Yep. I mean, right? That could be one of the strategies here.
It's ugly.
That's true.
All right. I think we covered the whole.
All right. Are you guys ready for our next segment?
Yes.
Hamish, do you need Hamish looks like he's ready to prepared for a sporting event. He's stretching.
No, I'm sitting in this armchair thing in the hotel room, which is just really bad for my back. It feels.
That adds up. All right. So our next segment is campaign analysis, which comes from Trust Relations, the podcast. Yeah. So Laura, you are new to this. But essentially what we're going to be doing is, did it work? Did it not work? Why did it work? Why did it not work? And sometimes they get a little bit sassy.
Oh, okay.
So Hamish, you want to do the honors of introducing this one?
Yeah, well, look, this is a partnership. And as people who listen to our podcast regularly will know, we often talk about collaborations between two different brands. And this one's no different. This one is a collaboration between IKEA and WWF, being the worldwide, what is it? The
Wide Wrestling Federation.
No, it's not the Federation. The
WWF is for the
World
animals.
Wildlife Foundation.
Right. Yeah.
Okay. This campaign is a tie-up between IKEA and WWF, being the World Wildlife Fund in Denmark.
WWF used to be wrestling, though.
It did, yes. Yes, but I want to clarify that when we talk about seed balls, we are not talking about wrestling balls.
Can I admit right now how I disappointed?
How you what?
How disappointed she is that it's not about wrestling. April has wanted to discuss this one because she thought...
She wanted to talk about...
Yeah, and for the record, it's WWE.
Right.
So
I legitimately
they only changed the name like 20 years ago, April, but whatever.
I don't watch wrestling.
Rewind.
You don't read articles either.
Yeah, because it's all over the news.
So this collaboration between IKEA and WWF, being the World Wildlife Fund, is aiming to raise awareness for biodiversity and the lack of wild habitats for endangered insects. Now, I don't know about what's covered in the US press, but in Australia, we've had a lot of coverage about the need to preserve habitats for bees and how if bees go extinct, the world is doomed. So this piece talks about how in 1985, IKEA introduced meatballs to their cafes and how that was revolutionary. And then in 2020, they introduced plant balls, which were plant-based meatballs, which were allowing vegans and vegetarians to eat in their restaurants. And now what they have done is introduce the seed ball, which is actually little seed balls, which you can buy and plant in pot plants and create habitats which are friendly for insects such as bees and moths and whatever else, butterflies probably. They don't go into details.
And you plant what inside? These are house plants or outside or what?
The Swedish seed balls are available as a limited edition initiative for IKEA family members. And when the stores, have run out, a Swedish seed balls at home guide will be available for download to help people make their own. So it's all a conversation starter for biodiversity and to help people fight more for wildlife. Yeah, I'd give this 4 out of 5 meatballs if I'm going to borrow the IKEA scale. I think it's really well thought out and conceived. IKEA are obviously big consumers of wooden products, etc. So they probably do some devastation, even though they plant their own forests. They're doing some harm to the environment. So doing something like this, which is an initiative to turn the conversation around and allow other people to do it at home as well, restores the conversation and gives people an active way to partake. And I think it's really good for kids. Kids can get involved with this. They are the active proponents in continuing this conversation. And I think it's a really nice way to do it.
Yeah.
So I get it. So yeah. So they're working to like replace the trees that they may be using, and the consumers can get involved and, you know, expand the growth of plants to support the environment, et cetera. However, are they really counterbalancing their fast furniture and all of the, you know, excess crap and garbage that they generate? I don't know, but I guess this is at least a balance to that, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think it's a lovely.
My motto is like, don't friends over 30, don't let other friends buy IKEA furniture.
Yeah, because then you're asked to help construct it, and that's impossible.
That too.
I used to joke that IKEA was a test of any relationship. If you want to see if you could actually be together, you have to go to IKEA, buy furniture together. I mean, the whole process, right? And assemble it.
Right.
If you can make it through that, you have a chance.
That's funny. Mm-hmm.
The IKEA marriage test.
Mm-hmm. It's, I mean, I think it's like, forget premarital counseling. Everyone should just go to IKEA.
Yeah, IKEA.
Write your prenup on the back of an IKEA instruction booklet.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, okay.
I think that's the way to do it.
Speaking of relationships, a boyfriend of mine who is now dead had created a couple of plants, and I just had to throw the last one away yesterday. So I was thinking, what kind of houseplants should I try to get? Maybe I should buy the IKEA balls.
Plastic ones.
Should. I think it's very clever that they did it in the spirit of what they've already been doing with the meatballs that are so famous, right?
I agree.
That it's six of them. And that it's like you get this little platter of seed balls. I think that's really clever.
Mm. No, I think it's a very well
done. It's on brand marketing. Campaign. Everything. Absolutely. Yes. All the way around. Okay.
And even the graphic they did, right? The IKEA seed balls, like the meatballs from 85 and the plant balls from 2020, which also elevates awareness of the plant balls and sort of their, you know, shift towards vegetarian friendly. So I think if they're trying to reach people with this sort of, you know, we're not just this old school, you know, Swedish brand with meatballs, but we're actually progressive. I think they've done a really nice job of demonstrating it. So it's like the storytelling and story doing are very well aligned here.
Mm-hmm.
Well, look, and I also think that if we're considering, are they on brand or not? Well, the instructions that you get to do this are equally as vague as the construction and assembly of furniture. So they are definitely-
I don't know if this would test a relationship the same degree.
No, probably not.
Pretty sure you can just put the balls in some soil and they die or they don't.
Mm-hmm. Well, you have to make the balls. That's the thing.
You have to make them?
Yeah. Mix the clay, soil and water to form a moderately firm mass. Divide into 6 pieces and roll them into little balls. Form holes.
That's too much for me already. It needs to be kind of done.
I mean, it's fun. I like that they made it.
I think it's really well done
for kids, right? That it's like this cute interactive thing to do with your kids. And I like that you're planting something that has the endangered insects tie-in. That's really cool.
I think it's beautiful. I really do like this piece.
It's really well done.
Yeah.
And there's nothing to do with wrestlers.
Apologies to everybody.
Okay.
You want to wrap it up? Yeah.
Thank you for joining the PR Wind Down.
And Trust Relations, the podcast.
Oh, if you're a new listener to one show or both, check out our website, trustrelations.agency/podcasts, plural, podcasts. There you'll find the details that you need about where to listen and when, and we hope that you stick around for both.
Now, our trusty TR, the podcast listeners, we're not going to leave you hanging. Don't forget this week's offer code. Visit the link in the show notes below and use Trust Analysis X over for crossover. So Trust Analysis X OVER for a chance to win a free Trust Analysis workshop for the first to enter. New clients qualify and terms and conditions apply. You can check out our webpage for a full rundown of the offer details.
I have to say it. We can't wait to wind down with you again next time.
Aww. And before we leave, I have a final request for both of you. Mm-hmm. Laura, you always have your little dance that you do for our outro music, and Hamish always does the burn after reading dance. Can I see them simultaneously? This will blow my mind.
It's the burn after reading. I don't know if I always do the...
He does the Brad Pitt dance, burn after reading, and you always do this. Okay, that made my day.